Hello and welcome along to another live podcast with Chloe West. This time I'm teaming up with a member of my podcast family, Linda Hayden from Pack Woman Podcast. Linda, thanks for joining me and hosting today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay, it's exciting teamwork. Today we are chatting about revenge porn, an issue that is far too common in Irish society today. So we're lucky enough to have two guests talk to us today about this. Susan Walsh joined the Sexual Health Centre in Cork in 2013 as an outreach worker, and she delivers outreach programmes on sexual health to marginalised communities, which involves things such as rapid HIV testing, pregnancy testing and contraception. And she's just about to, well, she has started her degree programme, and she has a diploma in addiction studies as well. And we have Megan Sims joining us today as well, who has been a victim of revenge porn and has been an absolute whirlwind of a force in Irish society in campaigning for proper legislation to be taken in this area. So she's a thorn in the Minister for Justice side, and we like people like that. So yes, so delighted to have you on board, guys. How are you keeping today?
Great.
Hi, I'm good.
Good. Thank you to all the attendees for bearing with us as we navigate technical issues while we're finishing this off. You have the opportunity as well, because it's a live podcast, to drop in questions throughout the chat. So if you hit the chat function and leave a message, and we'll have a little bit of space at the end as well, and you can ask your questions then. So I suppose to get started, we might start with yourself, Megan. You've experienced this, and you've kind of turned it into just such a positive and helping others as well. So yeah. Can you talk to us about your journey so far in this area?
Okay, so in 2016, I was a victim of revenge porn. I had my photos and videos shared with, thousands and thousands of people. It was very, very bad, but that wasn't even really the bad part. The bad part was all the bullying that came with it. I logged into my Facebook and I had like 400 plus messages, I think it was. Calling me, I don't know if I can say bad words, but I'm good at like a slut, a whore, telling me to kill myself. Really bad. It got sent to my grandparents. It got sent to my parents. It was sent to thousands of people. I couldn't walk down the street without people coming up to me. Like really, really bad. And then that led down, I had a bad suicide attempt after that, because obviously the bullying and everything was so bad. And then I just went off social media for a while, but I was still quite... But I was in a bad place for a while. And then my photos and videos were uploaded onto like revenge porn websites. They pop up every so often with tons of other girls. Now, some of these other girls were 15, 14, and their photos and videos were shared as well. So obviously I reached out to all of them because I had already kind of gone through mine. So I reached out to all of them. I brought some of them into the police with me, into the guards. And they were just like, look, there's nothing that can be done. And we're just like, why do you take the images? When these 14, 15-year-old girls, it had been older men, much older men, that had been taking the videos and then sharing them. And I just thought, that's not right. So I was off social media then for a long time, but I was still dealing with a lot of it behind the scenes. Like a lot of girls, mostly girls would still reach out to me asking for help. And it just got to a point where I was like, we need this legislation. And it's been... proposed, but it keeps being put off. And I was like, it's gone on too long now. And then I knew with coronavirus as well, it skyrocketed. And I was like, if we don't get this, we're going to end up with more deaths. So something has to be done, and it has to be done now. And I thought with the new government and everything, now is the time to push for it. So that has kind of been my story. I'm still working on it now. The petition has nearly 16,000, I think. So I've been working... like endlessly on it. I had loads of cases last week. It's just, we need supports available there, and we need it to be a law, especially so the perception around it changes, because the slut shaming that comes with it when someone is a victim is nearly worse than the images being shared, and that's bad enough.
Just to say, to give her fair dues, I suppose I did reach out to the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, to appear on the podcast. I didn't get a response. I also reached out to her for a quote to give for the podcast, and I didn't get a response, which would be nice to be able to have her particular viewpoint on this. But her viewpoint is that it's the legislation is a priority. Now, we're probably all sick of hearing that it's a priority, because that's been said quite a few times already. But it's due to come in at the end of the year. Susan, do you have much faith that's actually going to transpire?
I do, Caroline. To be honest, I remain optimistic. I remain hopeful. because as Megan said, it has huge impacts for people that I can't see how it's not going to come in, especially with COVID. I mean, during lockdown, I linked up with an organisation in the UK where the law is very different, and they saw a dramatic increase over there with the law in place. So, like, Ireland needs to learn from other countries and stuff that's happened, elsewhere, that we don't have that situation. I mean, that's even to listen to Megan talk about young girls, any girl of any age having that kind of image shared, and then that bullying. I mean, when you go into your bedroom and you're there with your phone, you're still not alone and getting all that abuse. I mean, that just can't, to me, that's just, I can't. I'm just like, no, like, that's just so wrong. Do you know what I mean? Something has to change. So I'd remain optimistic. And I was glad she did come out with a statement to say that it was a priority at the end of the year. So fingers crossed. Absolutely.
I mean, is it an obvious question to ask the guys, well, the people, I'm going to assume, who took those photos, are there any consequences for them? Or it's just,
of course,
you have all the consequences.
No. Yeah. Yeah, all the consequences. It's still a narrative in this country of, why did you take the pictures? You know, well, if you don't want your images getting out, don't share them. But the thing is, in a lot of cases, I think a study in the UK said it was 50% of images shared are by abusive partners. So people are manipulated into sending these images in a lot of cases. And then, of course, it's a hold over them then. You can't leave me or I'm going to do this. So it's really crucial that we do get this legislation fast, you know, and so the narrative changes as well. There's never any consequences in this country, even when you look at how many rape cases go to trial. And we have laws there. So to have something where there's no laws at all, there's no consequences. Even the guards were like, well, you shouldn't have taken them. To 15, 14-year-old girls, you know?
I see on Twitter, there's accounts out there. They're like voyeur accounts where they literally trawl people's social media and they lift photos and they'll put out innocuous photos, like just, you know, of women that they deem to be attractive. But you know that there is an undercurrent of really salacious videos and footage that they are sharing, that these guys are, you know, potentially getting up their partner and then sharing with the wider audience. And there has to be, you know, like we're looking at, there's no consequences for that. There's also no protection from it. Unless you keep all of your social media locked down, there's nothing to stop somebody from doing that to you. So, you know, what would you like to see, both of you, really, about moving forward from that? And you know, what kind of things do you think that the law should cover?
Do you want me to speak? I've gone over this. I think, first of all, we need to have protections for sex workers in it. And I have some issues with the current legislation as well. With it says that it has to be shared with malicious intent. But then that is up to the victim then to prove that the intent under that law, which can cause huge issues for our victims in other countries, because people can say, well, it's actually a fetish, so it's not shared with malicious intent. And then there's so many loopholes in this that we need to make sure it's covered. We need to make sure there's ample protection for sex workers in it as well, because under this legislation, it says with reasonable, privacy, it's meant to be a privacy thing as well. So people can come in then and argue that if people are posting on sites like OnlyFans or whatever, that they aren't expecting privacy, so they cannot be covered by that law either. When it should really be, if those photos, your intimate photos, are shared with malicious intent, because people half the time don't care where the images come from, they're still going to horribly bully someone, yeah, you know? So it's making sure that there's protection for everyone under that, and then support in place as well. So guards and everything know how to deal with victims and not just say, well, why did you take them? You know, and then there has to be mental health support. There's not, like, there's, of course, there's a lot of charities, but there's no proper training in digital safety. And it's impossible to get the images taken down at the minute. You have to go through copyright, when the guards really should have the legal obligation to get photos taken down as well, you know, especially if they're of underage girls, I think.
And I suppose from my perspective as well, I think what we call it is really important. So, like, having these conversations, when people hear revenge porn, when I do workshops, they automatically think somebody took part in a sexual act consensually.
Yeah.
And there's some form of consent, where in an awful lot of circumstances, that's not the case.
Oh, of course.
You know, two people on a night out or three people on a party, and somebody gets, you know, has too much drink and they take a photograph because it's funny, and next thing it's gone everywhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The impact that can have is massive.
I have... I've addressed this a good few times. The reason I call it revenge porn is nobody has a clue what image-based sexual abuse is.
Totally.
Not yet. So I'm trying to push. I always say revenge porn, and then I have underneath image-based sexual abuse. Okay. The revenge porn is just so people know what I'm talking about. And then it is image-based sexual abuse. That either way, no matter what manner the photos are taken in, it shouldn't matter. It's still image-based sexual abuse, no matter if it was from OnlyFans or whatever. It's sharing someone's photos without their consent. And that's the big thing surrounding this. It has to be a conversation around consent rather than, you know, revenge porn or whatever.
I think that title is really important to say as well. I have an article coming out in the Irish Examiner at some point, whenever they publish it, about this topic as well. And to say that, you know, revenge porn makes it really salacious, and it's a very newsworthy headline of like, oh, victim of revenge porn. And that's something that almost sexes it up a little bit. But
yeah,
like the actual, like what you've said there as well about your experience, and we'll delve into that a little bit more, is that it is image-based sexual abuse because it's done in a way to cause harm and to cause trauma. Like no one's sharing those images to go, look at this beautiful person, so amazing. And also they shouldn't be doing that anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's the idea of like, it's done with an intent to cause harm. And then the people who are sharing it are obviously also engaging in that intent to cause harm. So we need to have abuse in that conversation into it. It's the same as domestic violence and sexual violence as well. And what you're saying there, and I know, Linda, you have so much to say with this as an advocate for victims of sexual violence, like that idea of the victim blaming infuriates me so much. Of like Megan was saying, well, should I just don't take the photos then? So I'll let Linda go off on an epic rant about that, because I know you have a lot to say on that topic.
You see, the thing is that it all comes down to this rape culture that we have, and this culture, the shame culture. And a massive part of it is that people don't speak out about what has happened to them. And the problem is a lot more widespread than we will ever really know, because all we can do is we can take things like the Savvy Report, which is 18 years old now. There is another one coming. But we don't have any way to actually accurately measure what level. And, you know, the Savvy 2 needs to include this image-based crime, because it is a form of sexual assault. And unless we start to let people know that, and I think, you know, we've seen recently some brilliant stuff on the TV around sexual violence, like I May Destroy You was a brilliant program that BBC did with Michaela Coles, and she wrote it, and there was things in there about image-based crime, and, you know, differentiating what was and what wasn't. The shame culture is a huge thing, and we have an awful lot to do. And whenever I talk about rape culture or shame culture, I get absolutely piled on because people don't understand what rape culture is. They think it's you saying that rape is okay, but it's actually not. It's this kind of stuff. And if you start with this kind of stuff, you know, and if you shame victims for this, you're definitely going to be shaming them. You know, you're keeping them quiet. If you're keeping people quiet at this level, you're going to be keeping it quiet at a full-on sexual assault level, because people look at other victims and what happens to other victims. And we saw it last week. You know, we had a 15-year-old who was basically being blamed for being trafficked. And we have a culture that even the media is setting these people up to be shamed. And we've seen it time and time and time again. And like, we keep calling the papers out on it. And it's great to see a shift in culture away from that. But you will always have people there who are always going to do this. And I think the shame part of it, and understanding shame and rape culture, is the huge part of it. And that comes with the education piece about consent. And the consent, the new consent curriculum that is coming in, the RSE curriculum that's going to cover consent, has to cover this as well, because we see it so many times. Like, consent, image-based crime comes from where you have given consent to somebody to view these pictures and view
not
these
always
videos. not always but sometimes, and then that person has just ignored that consent, and then because you haven't consented to show it to anybody else, so therefore you're into assault, you're into a sexual assault kind of a situation. So the shame culture has to be addressed at education level, because we're never going to change the culture unless we change the education that we're doing around.
Absolutely. That's one of my main things I want to focus on, is changing. We need educational consent as well surrounding the digital age, because like this is the first generation really to be trying to navigate sex, but also having a phone, a smartphone in their hand constantly. Like when I was even like in first and second year of secondary school, it wasn't as big of a thing. So now it's, they're navigating how to have sex in this new digital age. And it's such a new thing that the education just isn't there. So how can you understand consent if you're not properly educated on it in that sense as well? And that's the only way I think that the victim blaming and everything is going to stop is with education. I just think that is the most important thing. And
No, I totally agree with you. I work as a community outreach worker in health promotion. So like we're constantly, you know, evolving and changing with the times and with what's going on and what's current and how can we respond better to support people. Because like that's shocking, Megan, that you like you went to the Gards and that was what you were met with. So like I think people, not only, as you said, Linda, quite rightly, like they get silenced and they don't say it. If they do say it, they don't get heard. And then they literally are just in limbo and they have nowhere at all to go. So, I held a webinar a couple of weeks ago and it was predominantly women on it. And we had a conversation about this subject. And like that, Megan, we called it revenge porn for the same reason, because people would actually identify what it is.
Yeah.
And then we went into its intimate image abuse and what forms it can take. But I suppose while we're struggling at the moment because the law isn't there, what I'm trying to focus on is what can we do? So, you know, the people that are out there that are suffering like this, what can they do? Can they get it removed? Is there an avenue around it? Is there an organisation that can support with it? And I mean, we're the Sexual Health Centre, so I would obviously always signpost people anything to their sexual health needs to us. But essentially, intimate image abuse, it isn't a crime here, so there isn't an actual organisation assigned to it. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, that's what I'm focusing on actually setting up. Because there has to be something, and I want someone who can work to get stuff taken down, track IP addresses. I can go to the police with a multitude of evidence and just say, this person's after sharing it, here's their IP address, here's everything that's wrong, and then have supports there in place, have a hotline set up. So if someone can call at any time and say, here, I need mental health support. I've been kicked out of my house. My images are being shared. It's like a sexual assault, but public, is what I always say. That's what it feels like. So to have the mental health support and then legal advice as well, there has to be one for all internet crimes, because stalking and all that is all, cyberbullying still isn't a law. That's all covered in this as well that I'm passing. So if we have something, an organisation that can cover all internet crimes, I think would be, it's hugely, hugely, hugely needed, because it's just not there.
Absolutely.
Cyber crime unit in Harcourt Street, what are they doing?
I think there's a lot of training that needs to happen as well. Like if we're talking, you know, like I've worked in the area of domestic violence for a long time, and a lot of the guards still don't know the differences between some of the different orders and what those different protection orders can bring to the person, or, you know, whatever is going on in that aspect. So I don't have a lot of faith sometimes that they will know the nuances of image-based sexual abuse and what rights someone has. And again, like Megan said, if it's that victim-blaming approach of, sure, why'd you take the photos in the first place? It just shows you how far we have to go in training the guards, in training judges. A lot of judges' understanding of domestic violence is hopelessly outdated, and we know that, and around sexual assault as well. And then, like Megan was saying, like, you know, the internet is just like, we live our lives on the internet now, and you know, you want to update someone who's been doing this job for like 40 years and is presiding over cases that, you know, it's of such a new phenomenon. They have to have up-to-date training by actual qualified professionals as well. Like that's the thing of like, it's like sex education. There's some people doing sex education that have zero qualifications and maybe should not be doing that. But yeah, that kind of training. And I know, Susan, do you train professionals, or you're just working with clients themselves?
So at the moment we're working with clients, and because of, like that, we're responding as it's, you know, as it's evolving. And during lockdown, it gave me an opportunity to link up with revengeporn.org in the UK, because I know this is like an issue like we're talking about, and I wanted to know more about it before I had any educational piece on it. So that's where we started. We would have always covered you know, internet safety and things like that, but it had, like as Megan said, has to start earlier, and it has to be consistent, and that anybody can be a victim. And the other thing is, I feel really passionate about, is how we can all be allies, and how bystander intervention can be quite effective as well.
Yeah, because it's just as important.
Yeah, because there's always going to be people, unfortunately, I know me and Karen, we spoke with this last week about shame. There's always going to be people that want to shame us and put it up and think it's funny or think it's this or whatever, for whatever reason, power, abuse, all of those horrible reasons. So how do we get ourselves resilient enough and able to deal with something should it happen? Obviously, I don't want it to happen, but capacity building in that area is fundamental. Do you know what I mean? And teaching each other to say, well, like, don't click and share. If that was your brother, sister, mother, daughter, niece, how would you feel? Think about it. It's virtual world is the world. We kind of disassociate because we can close the laptop. But we know it's the world. It's where we are. You know what I mean? And we wouldn't do it in person. So why do you think it's appropriate? So I really think like that ally piece is a powerful message. That, and that's something that we can action right now, today, all of us, whoever, you know what I mean? Which I think is key. Because social support networks is what can support victims in this situation. If I have a good social support network, can I tell somebody the emotional support I need if this happens to me? As you said, Megan, like the photos is one side of it. It's all the other stuff that comes with it, and the aftermath can be endless for somebody. And we can do something about that as individuals, you know, personally or professionally.
I think there's a huge opportunity here to reframe the conversation and to say, if you are sharing these images, you are committing a form of sexual violence. And it is that pyramid of sexual violence and all the different nuanced ways. And just to make that really clear. And it's, again, it's reframing domestic violence. It's not, well, why don't you just leave? It's, why does the abuser choose to abuse? And that's what we need to focus on. It's the action rather than the victim's action, so to speak. And that kind of thing. I know, like, Megan, you were talking there about like that reaction from people. They were your peers in your classroom, or like, because you're a tiny little baby.
Thousands of people on the internet.
Yeah.
Thousands of people on the internet, like 400 plus Facebook messages. My family obviously weren't happy. My friends were amazing. They never really cared. Like, they didn't think there was anything shameful in it. But society as a whole still isn't in that place where we are comfortable with women being openly sexual. We're just not. It's still a very new concept, and it's very threatening to a lot of people to see a woman being openly sexual. Now, I think a lot of it has changed with OnlyFans and everything. A lot more people are being sexual. But at the time, like, my photos and videos, it was a huge scandal. And then it was on to the next girl whose photos were shared. And like 9 times out of 10, it is girls. 90% of cases is girls. And then that's the problem, is in this country, we're still in that mindset, that religious Catholic mindset still of, you know, women shouldn't be openly sexual, or women are sluts but men are legends. So it was shaming by thousands. That was it. And then, like, as I went on, I was like, I did nothing wrong. I was like, this actually isn't me. This is a society problem rather than a me issue. But it does, you internalize it and you feel like that was my fault.
I ask a question around flipping it the other way. Unsolicited dick pics and the ilk. Would you like to see that covered under this legislation?
I think it is.
Yeah, because that's another huge issue. I mean, I was speaking to somebody over the weekend who's 7-year-old. He found an unsolicited dick pic in her Snapchat.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's actually, I think that is covered under this legislation, under the image crimes. I can't remember the name, but there's a specific name for it. Cyber flashing. Cyber flashing is covered under this law, I think, specifically. Because absolutely, that needs to be done. I think all of us have gotten a few. I got like 3 last week. But I remember getting them from when I was like 14, when I was on Snapchat. And it's just not good enough. You know, you open, nobody wants to see it.
But there's also, you have to name that as well, of this is men, you know, over the age of 18, sending pictures of their genitals to children. Like a 7-year-old. Like, so this isn't like, you know, unsolicited dick pics are like a meme now, but this is adults sending their genitals to children.
This is child sex abuse. It's grooming.
I would like that covered underneath the law. In Canada, I know that they have an age specific thing. So all the laws would be more severe if someone's underage. And I think that needs to be brought in here.
Yeah.
Because under the current legislation, it's not. It's just one thing for all ages. But we need that covered under this legislation, that if someone's under the age of whatever, that it's a more serious crime. Yeah. And there needs to be stronger things for like for repeat offenders. You know what I mean? So like the fine, but in some countries then they have like, if you do it once, you get this. But then if you do it again, you'll be put into prison for 7 years. And that's a huge deterrent.
As Ver Grogan just said there, it'll put loads of men off the internet. because there are guys out there who just literally will find a random person on the internet and just send... Yeah. Like, it happens all of the time, and it's not acceptable because people are traumatized by it. You know, like, if you get one, I've gotten them at 7 o'clock in the morning, and you're like, huh?
Yeah. Not awake enough to deal with that.
No.
But you know what's sad?
I think
what's sad is I'm so used to them that they don't bother me anymore. And that should never have been the case.
Not, yeah.
That should never, like, I was getting them from such a young age, and I used to get so many a week that I got to the point where I wouldn't even delete people off Snapchat, that I just open them and close them. Like it was nothing.
Mm.
I've seen hundreds.
I think,
but then, do you find sometimes as well, they do this thing where they will send you a picture of somebody else's penis, and that's also image-based crime. So.
It is.
It's a weird, weird world out there. I think Camille has an excellent point in the Q&A here. And I really want to come back to Camille at the very end because I know she's going to have amazing things to say about Megan's point earlier about sex workers being included in this conversation as well. Mm-hmm. But Camille's made an excellent point. I think we need to get more bold with the language and call it what it is. It's visual terrorism, an extension of the weaponization of photography, which is gender, violence and the camera. Because Megan is right, the language that surrounds it is problematic. What do we think about that point?
Yeah, I think, yeah. Like, this is all very misogynistic, and it's still all, it's very, it is violence, like, it is. And it's a control mechanism. Like, we know women have been oppressed throughout history because of our sexuality, so it's a control thing as well. You see a woman doing this, and all of a sudden, the whole country goes to shame her because all of a sudden, like, she's changing the narrative, and a lot of people get scared when they see someone speaking. I get a lot of men scared in my DMs saying I'm trying to oppress men because I speak out about this, and trying to flip it and say, well, actually, like, apparently me fighting for women's rights is evil because I'm trying to take men's rights away. But all I'm asking is not to be abused.
Which isn't unreasonable. It's 2020. I mean, come on, you know. And the thing is, I think it is 2020 and we are evolving digitally. So we have to, laws need to come along with that.
Yeah.
Supports need to come along with that. We can't just stay where we were and expect it all to be fine. Because, I mean, I mean, even just thinking there, God, Megan, when you're talking about being that age, getting those kind of pics, like my niece is 12 and I'm like, oh my God, we were terrified to get our phone. And then I talked to my sister, and at Sex Health Centre, we do education pieces with parents around, we have a Screen Age Kids campaign coming out, talking to them about the use of phones and how to do it safely. But I mean, you're still going to be terrified if your child is going, has a phone, and like you're getting a dick pic at 7 in the morning.
Like, yeah, well, I would suggest monitoring social media of people who are underage, no matter what. I know we think, oh, give them a phone, they're fine, but we have to monitor.
Yeah, and it's back to that whole gatekeeping thing, exactly, it's on victims. We need to start making people accountable, and the only way to make people accountable is to make it illegal.
Exactly,
yeah, 100% agree.
Susan, you have the details of the imprisonment proposals and fines and all that kind of jazz that's actually being proposed. I had them written down. I don't know where.
Yeah, and you've got them somewhere written down.
So it's a maximum of 7 years in prison. And then we know in Ireland, maximum
they
prison
won't
terms
be get that.
Doesn't really
they won't
happen.
Get that. No, it's a fine, I think, first. There's a 3,000 fine or something. But normally they will be fined. And then there's a maximum sentence of 7 years. But I don't really see that ever being implemented. Now, there is talk of making people actual sex offender, like have to sign the sex offenders register, which I think would be a good idea because it's a huge deterrent. And it changes the narrative completely. Then they're a sexual abuser, you know, rather than just like sending intimate images.
But if someone flashed you on the street, we would have no issue with saying that's a sex offender. But
exactly.
Like Linda was saying, you get a dick pic at 7 in the morning, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, do, you know, and you're going, that's still a sexual offender. Like,
it is,
doing
yeah.
that to women.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, like, there is a gender, obviously, analysis in this as well. There is actually some research that is interesting, that men who send dick pics to women obviously generally get a negative response, and men who send dick pics to men, so as in a gay experience, yeah. Get a more favorable response. And it's like, just there's so much to pick apart in that, of like societal expectations, but like,
well, also there's a huge issue on Grindr. There's a huge issue on Grindr with image-based sexual abuse and the sending around of intimate images. Huge on Grindr. So I think there's people doing research into that now at the minute, around, especially in the LGBT community, because it's a much larger issue, where you send pictures to one person, and then because the gay community is so small, everyone kind of knows each other. So next thing, your photo's around the whole community. So it's a whole other issue that also needs to be tackled in that, you know, of why is this so normalized within that community, and what can we do to educate people on why it's not okay. I don't know, it's such a large, large issue. You don't really realize, you kind of think it's very cut and dry. It's really not.
In order to get it registered as a sexual offence, like, what do we need to do? Do we need to do some lobbying? Do we need to, you know, I know you're flying it with the petition to get it brought into legislation, but we do actually have to make sure that it falls under a sexual violence crime.
Yeah, I meet with somebody from a legal standpoint who understands everything, because I have multiple issues that have been brought up to me already with the law, like around the intent and around the reasonable expectation for privacy. If that is that going to cause harm to sex workers, and there's a lot of issues with the law that could be seen already, and we've seen issues with other laws. So it's about, I think, completely revamping this law nearly now that we have a better understanding, and making sure that, like, this is just being passed under harmful communications and related offences. It's not being passed under a sexual assault crime. So I don't know. I was told to just pass it because it'll still, once the legislation is there, it can be expanded upon.
Yeah, but the time that takes to happen is...
get it right first time. Yeah. Vicky Conway has just offered to chat to you, Megan, there. So that's, you know...
Amazing, like absolutely.
And she's offered Sinead Ring to do so too for you. So
I know all the issues that have come up with other legislations around the world. I'd be in contact with the people who lobby for revenge porn laws in the US and the UK, like the main ones. So I know basically the issues that can arise from the legislation, and that's already come up. And men have already used those to shame people on my page, the holes in the laws, saying, well, there wasn't a reasonable expectation of privacy. And it's like, there was.
I want to pick you up on that point, because you put something really interesting up on Twitter the other day. So you had talked to a specific radio station, we won't mention their name, about your experience, and had a sympathetic experience, and they listened to you. And then on their Twitter, they posted that somebody had recorded people having sex outside next to a lorry or something. Between two vans. Where there's a will, there's a way. You'll find a space, it's fine. And this person was so horrified that these people were having sex that they videotaped it and put it on Facebook.
Oh no, they weren't horrified. I listened to the whole interview. I was on the radio speaking about this issue.
Yeah, I saw your tweets. You were like, no, I'm talking about it. You were like, I'm in.
He did to laugh at them. He said he found it hilarious. He was not worried about them. He said he felt a little bit bad. These people were addicts and from the homeless community that these videos were taken of. Now, Susan probably knows the one I'm on about.
I do. Yeah, I do. And I was so angry. I was actually off on Friday, and I just saw it pop up on Twitter. And I was like, no, this cannot actually, I cannot be seeing this. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then I saw your comment, Megan, and I was like, because I hadn't heard the interview, and I was saying, no, I must have got it wrong. You know, I must be taken out of context in some way. I was hoping optimistic view. No, not at all. So yet again, not only are we shaming people for a sexual act, we're shaming people who are already in a chaotic situation, suffering from homelessness, possible addiction issues. Like, how is that appropriate that we think, do you know what I'll do in this instance? I'll video this now. And you know what? Great crack, I'll go on the radio station.
Yeah. And to give these people a platform to come on and laugh about committing what will be a crime is incredibly dangerous, and feeds into this whole victim blaming narrative as well. Like, these people, he said it, and I quote, they are unaware of their surroundings.
Exactly.
So if people are unaware of their surroundings, they cannot consent to be on video, you know?
Exactly. So how more vulnerable can you get? Like, we're talking about vulnerable pockets. as a society, which I'm so, I mean, I work with sex workers, I work with people in direct provision centres, I work with active IV drug users, people in early recovery, all people that are extremely vulnerable and that have had really traumatic events throughout their whole life that some of us may have had as well and some of us may not. How do we then as a society go, oh, let's video that and it's going to get airtime? It is just bizarre. I mean, I just can't understand it at all. And if I'd have actually heard it, I never ring into the radio, but I was on a day off, so I would have, because I was so angry.
No, I did. I did it for you.
Good on you. It's just like those two people unaware of their surroundings. Oh my God, do you know what they're going through? I mean,
yeah,
it's not appropriate to have sex anywhere, like in public. But I mean, you could do something about that. You could have.
But that's their home at the end of the day. Like, where else are they going to have sex? We need to protect these people instead of post them all over the internet and laugh at them. That's all. It's a bit of humanity. And he said he felt a little bit bad, but still thought that it was too funny not to post. That's exactly. And I quote him.
That's again, if we reframe that and named him as a sexual abuser and a sex offender for videotaping people.
Yeah. How is this?
We need to start holding the media to account. We've seen it too many times over the last couple of weeks. I think as potentially even as victims, we need to start saying this is the code of conduct and we will not accept anything less than this from the media.
But we shouldn't have to.
And it shouldn't be done to us to police it. They should be policing themselves. But, you know, I had a conversation with the assistant editor of the Irish Times last week over that debacle last week. And in fairness, they are going to bring out their own codes of conduct. And I just said to them, put yourself in the victim's shoes. If they're reading it, what will that look like to them? And if you think it's going to do more harm than good, then don't run with it.
Absolutely.
You know? And this is where we come back to the shame culture again. And it's totally that kind of thing. And that sickens me. It absolutely, if it doesn't sicken you, if you're laughing at that, you're just as bad.
Because there wouldn't be a case for it, Linda. If that's the thing, that's the sad reality of it is, like, how is there even a place for it? But there clearly is. Do you know what I mean? So, like, while we're on here and we're appalled, there's obviously people that are like, oh, yeah, that is funny. I'm just, my mind just gets blown. I'm like, no, seriously, what is wrong with people?
I think we need to explore as well.
It's not the first time.
But we need to explore as well that the power dynamics that are involved in, like, we're talking about shame culture, but we have to be specific that this is generally targeted at women as well.
Yes. And, absolutely.
You know, like, there's people who are on OnlyFans at the moment and they're having their material taken without their consent. And it's, there's some kind of like power dynamic of like, I'm not going to pay you money for this. I'm going to take it and share man. And that's about power and control. And there's a lot in that. Thankfully, I don't think I've been a victim of this, but, you know, who knows at this point. And I know I had an ex threaten me with this as I was going to my grandmother's funeral. He was going to release our images and that was, he was abusive anyway. So it's like that idea of like, that was nothing other than power and control and the desire to cause trauma and hurt. And I know, Megan, like, you're a gorgeous looking woman. And I think like that plays part of it as well. I'm not hitting on you, by the way. So serving. But like, I think that does play a part of it as well. Of like, there's people who are like, want to take you down a notch. And that's a power and control thing as well.
Look, yeah, I'm going to be honest. It was a lot of like, my photos were uploaded by a girl who had it in for me, who I didn't know at all. So, like, she uploaded my things and had this horrible paragraph about me. And, of course, I'm not going to name anyone because it's not a revenge porn campaign. I've had to say that, you know what I mean? People are like, oh, name them, shame them. And I'm like, look, it's so far in the past. That would actually do more harm. But, yeah, like, there is a narrative pushed with this that all of a sudden I was this awful whore. I'm a horrible person all of a sudden just because I have sex. And it's this whole thing of, like, as a woman, you're put into, like, a box. You can be, like, you can be beautiful or you can be intelligent or you can have sex, but you cannot be all three. Like, you know what I mean? So I do think there is this element of trying to take people down. Like, if you see someone doing well on OnlyFans, like, I actually have a friend who's on OnlyFans and had her pictures and videos leaked recently, like last week, because she's doing very well on it. So people are making threads about it now and posting her images constantly to, like, be like, oh, well, look, I can get them for free. Why would you pay for that? Just because they can't afford it as well. Like, if you looked at my Twitter yesterday, there's a guy coming out saying how wrong OnlyFans was, but he's okay with Pornhub. And I said, why? And he said, because I don't have to pay for it. And that's in a direct quote.
Like, I think all four of us just face palmed at that comment.
The other thing about the likes of your Pornhub and things like that, I know there is a big campaign out there to just shut it down.
Yeah.
Because the amount of sexual violence that has been filmed that is on there, and you've got rape victims who are having to go legal to get their rights taken off of.
Child porn. And this is the thing. Shocking. There needs to be some sort of verification process if you're uploading videos. Mm. Anywhere. Same with Facebook. Same with anything. That if you're uploading, we need to have verification, I think, behind profiles in general. If you're uploading, you should have to join with a passport. So, or some sort of legal identification, so we can stop all these fake accounts that go on and bully anyone. In general,
there are issues with that around, you know, trans people or, you know, victims of domestic violence, and
that is they don't very have their fair
and sex workers.
But I think that's very fair, but you should still have to have that behind the account. Does that make sense? Like, you should be able to, like, have to upload your passport, but you can then use anything you want on the website, be whoever you want to be on it. But behind that is still some sort of legal documentation that you're a real person. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So just the documentation there, and then you can be whoever you want to be after that and post it, but it's at your own risk. Same with Pornhub. You can upload anything you want on Pornhub and you just make an account. There needs to be some sort of age verification to upload things.
There are moderators on Pornhub. I interviewed one of the ones. They used to have a base in Ireland for tax reasons, I'm assuming. And I interviewed someone who worked as a moderator there, and he would view, like, 350 to 400 videos a day of user-based content that was uploaded. And he said there's quite a few times it looked like someone was sketchy, someone was underage, and their response was just forward on to management, and then they wouldn't see after that. So obviously that's clearly not good enough, because that system doesn't work, and we know that. And we also know from conversations about Facebook as well that, like, a lot of the moderators are, like, actually just living in extreme trauma from the videos that they're being forced to watch and delete. So obviously that system's not working either.
I can speak about this from a personal standpoint, because my videos were uploaded to Pornhub. So I went through this, and they were uploaded, and I emailed them, and then I tried to get them taken down, and it was days. And like, when it's days, it's so hard to get taken down. Other websites, I had one guy reply to me and just say, "I'm not taking it down, you slut," from an actual porn website.
Oh my God.
Like, it's a very hard process. I think this is why, like, if we're setting up a non-profit or whatever, we have to have someone there that can take them down for people, because it's like, that was so traumatizing for me, trying to get them taken down. And every comment everyone had about your body is just going through your head, and you have to re-traumatize yourself over and over and over to even look at them. And the police won't help, nobody will really help. I know I follow a girl on Twitter who's, like, videos of her as a 6-month-old baby were uploaded to Pornhub, and she'd open I think it was a legal case to get them taken down, and they were up for days. So we need to do better as a society in general.
But even, like, to imagine even doing that, that's where, like, we come back to, like, we should, of course, have all these supports and preventions, but it's the fact of, like, what is going through your head if you're doing something like that, or if you're sharing this content? Like, what, we need to have that conversation and just go... Like, what's going on there?
It's like, I just think, like, when I hear stuff like that, I'm like, do people realize that the phone, like, the worldwide, like, www, what does it stand for? You know, it's not just going to who you send it to. Like, that's frightening. A 6-month-old, I'm just...
I know, it's horrific, but it has to be spoken about.
No, absolutely. And the thing is, I mean, I suppose I'm actually very sex positive. I mean, I do workshops as well, and I'm very sex positive about women expressing their sexuality. Men, you know, it's a pleasurable experience, but it's about with consent. Everything is with consent. Do you know what I mean?
And adults. Of course.
Adults.
Of course, that's it, yeah.
We're like, you know, who would think that's an appropriate thing to do? Like, do you know? And I think we should call, like, I think... Obviously, we're safely, but I mean, calling people out and stuff is necessary, isn't it, as well? Do you know what I mean? I mean, I think we kind of, we're even down to the small things as a society, Irish people, we kind of go for something to eat, we moan about it to our friend and then say, was that lovely, thanks. and we say nothing. Mm. So like we kind of have a culture of like being nice.
We do.
But maybe we should just be a bit more robust in our approach. Do you know what I mean? And
we need to,
Maybe more of us were actually that's unacceptable. You know, and why aren't we doing that? I think that's kind of another, like even a deeper layer. Why don't we do that? It's because we don't feel competent. We don't feel heard. Is it because of self-esteem? Is it because we feel judged? And we'd rather be the bullier than be bullied, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
There's two things around that. And it's again, back to the shame thing. Like it's, you have to get your message across and you have to say things. You have to call people out on things.
Yeah.
And I got accused yesterday of being aggressive in my tone to somebody who was asking, had somebody reported a rape? And I was aggressive in my tone because I'm sick of answering that question again and again and again and again. People need to learn how to talk to people. People need to learn, you know, go use Google, find out what the report rates are, you know, stop asking victims to inform you. You know, and it's this whole thing, and it's a very fine line between wanting people to listen to your message and not losing your temper when you have to constantly repeat yourself again and again and again. And it's getting to the stage where I don't feel the need to be nice to people who are coming in to ask those kinds of questions anymore, because either listen or don't. It's your choice. I'm not going to convince you either way, right? If you don't want to listen to me, get lost. I've other people to talk to. I've victims to support. Yeah. And this is where the narrative has got to start changing. It's around, it's not down to us to inform people about this. We're out there and we're doing it because, you know, we're further along the journey. You know, if they were to ask somebody who's that's just happened to, what's their reaction? How traumatized are they going to be? Or how much are they going to blame themselves because of the way people are asking these questions? And it's a huge society issue. Like, just stop it. When somebody discloses to you, just say, that's terrible. I'm really sorry that happened. What do you need? I believe you.
End of story.
No, empathy. I mean, like, we have the capacity to show empathy for loads of different things all the time. Do you know? So I don't, is it not just the same? Do you know, I don't understand why someone would do that, go through that ream of questioning with somebody when somebody's just disclosed something to you that happened to them. I mean, in our centre inside, our one of our mottos, no bias, no judgment, no exception. And that's not BS, like, that's not just for the sake of it. That is genuinely what happens when service users come into our service. Do you know what I mean? Whatever their experience is their experience. And like, we're there to support them if we can, and if not, signpost them to an appropriate support that we know can support them and will support them appropriately. Do you know, because it's not good enough. If somebody comes in and tells you, that's a massive deal. You can't re-traumatize somebody and say, well, I don't know what to do, I'll send you off to someone else. You know, you have to sit with the person and hear them out and validate that their experience is of value, as are they. Do you know? I mean, Megan said at the very start that she had a suicide attempt. I mean, that's the reality of it. That's the other, like, it's life and death. Do you know, people might hear us and because I get really emotional and passionate about it because it really drives me mad as well. But that's because people are, you know, left with poor mental health, suicide ideation, dying, suicide, self-harm.
Oh, people who have killed themselves because of this, yeah.
Yeah, do you know?
So, look at Dara Quigley.
Yeah.
Dara Quigley.
I know.
And the Gardaí did that.
Yeah.
The Gardaí did it, yeah. That's honestly what inspired all of this in the first place. I was reading her story and I was obviously, I dealt with a lot of victims and everything. I was reading her story again and I was like, there's been no justice. Like, for anyone who's been a victim of this, there has been no justice. There has to be, especially for Dara, when the whole country betrayed her. And just we see it over and over again.
To explain to listeners who aren't in Ireland, Dara Quigley was a young woman, very, very young, maybe 23, something like
that. 26, I think.
Yeah, and she ended up in Garda custody one weekend and the guards released footage of her naked. And she's obviously having a mental health episode as well. So like, extremely vulnerable young person. And then that guard released those images as well and has had zero sanctions over WhatsApp. So shared to fellow guards.
Shared 125,000 times plus. So it's the whole country.
Yeah, like we need to have a conversation about like how we expect our, well, elected representatives and our support services and public officials to behave as well. And we've had that conversation around different political stuff like Golfgate and how we expect our politicians to react and behave. But when our Gardaí and our police services aren't supportive of victims, you know, that has a huge impact on people willing to go. And I know Vicky Conway, another Tortoiseach family member, she's just launching her new podcast on police, which is looking at the actions of the guards. So I think it's really important to be accountable and have that conversation. Bear says in the comments, her mum still has a campaign for justice and is still trying to get justice for Dara. Yeah, so if anyone wants to get involved in that, please do look it up and join that campaign, because this only happened maybe a year or 2 years ago.
It's 2 years ago now. Her anniversary. I met her mother last year. She's a phenomenal woman. Phenomenal.
Amazing.
And it's just heartbreaking to think that's literally just... like it's the worst thing that can happen to you.
When you're so vulnerable and you're meant to be in the care of people, and that's what happens too. So it's not just, you know, that's why revenge porn doesn't fit the title as well.
It's not
intimate partner all the time. It's like Megan was saying, it's people who are like jealous of you or whatever, or it's just people who want to take you down a notch, or the
abusive
guards.
Partners. And I think we need to have a conversation around, like, people, it is a lot of times abusive partners, you know, it's a threatening thing. And then she breaks up with you or something, you're hurt, so you go and share them. But I have friends who have been recorded, like, my friend was 17 and she was recorded without her, like, without her knowledge, extremely drunk, too drunk to consent to anything, recorded, shared around her whole school, her whole everything. She's been on the radio with me speaking a few times, and it's horrific. Like, the stories, these are all, they are mainly young girls, but I have people in all ages and in all professions, in everything. And you just, I think it's a fear that so many of us have. If you've ever sent an image, you know, and it's time we have to stop living in fear. You know, we have to be able to know that we're protected if anything does happen. And we have to understand that a lot of them do come from abusive partners.
And I do think it's a challenge in that narrative of, you know, when we were saying about you were met with Megan, the guard saying, why did you share it? Like, challenging that narrative. But when I was on the webinar last week, it came up as well in conversation, and we were talking about, well, why would you send them? And like, I said, just bring it back to like something very basic. Have you ever sent a text message that you regret? Because I've sent lots that I regret.
We're all human at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Does that mean I deserve for it to be, my everything be aired? I sent it to one person or whatever, and just kind of challenging that narrative back. And that's low tide. I mean, do you know what I mean? That's something that can be easily resolved, and you know what I mean, but it's about helping people understand the impact that this can have, I think, and the seriousness of it is crucial.
I think we might wrap up the main podcast there, and because I really want to bring in some of our audience members, because I especially want Camille to come in on this, if you can, Camille. Camille is next week's podcast guest, which is, we recorded that forever ago, so you know, you're finally up and running. Camille does a lot of work around sex work imagery, and I think your conversation about the image as terrorism is really important there. Do you want to expand on that a little bit more, and how sex workers experience that?
To put me into context, I'm a PhD student and I study online visual cultures of sex work. And if you look at the concept of the weaponization of photography, this is not something that's new. Susan Sontag was talking about this 30 years ago about the camera has been an agent of violence, of gender, and of, you know, directed at women. And I guess my issue with the language is, one, that it excludes sex workers, which is a side issue. Yeah. But I think we have to pick up on what Megan said about we need to be more bold. And the reason why I call it visual terrorism is because it's a deliberate act of reputational destruction designed to incite terror. And I don't care if men think that's melodramatic, because the reality is this is directed towards women. And we need to find a way to sort of hammer this home, that the digital image, with it being so networked, that it's become a bloody weapon that's being directed at women, which sort of brings me to the next point, the problem with what constitutes a public image in our networked world when we're all sharing images. Like if you look at the British legislation, part of that hinges on where was the image public. And we need to shift the conversation from was it public to who was the intended audience, which would then tackle the OnlyFans issues. Well, yeah. It's my right to sell photos of my tits if I want to, but you don't then have the fucking right to then on-sell those, to upload those just because they're on the internet. The other issue that I have that also relates back to the language that shapes this is sexual, you know, image by sexual violence, whilst I respect that most of it is about sexualized images. In the context of sex work, whilst a lot of the images are released are sexual images, like there's a case just today in New Zealand where a guy got slotted for 4 months because he sent pornographic images of a sex worker to her mother. But what happens in the case where the sex worker is shamed through the sharing of non-sexual images, images of Facebook accounts that are, I mean, and this happened to me, I'll be very honest about this, my private photos, non-sexual, were then connected with my sex working identity online. So therefore, the definition of sexual-based abuse doesn't fit that narrative because the sharing of non-sexualized images is just as vile as the sharing of sexualized images, which is why it all comes down to, and I'm very passionate about this, and I've just done a bloody chapter about this, it's the fucking language, right?
It is.
And I think Linda was talking about how she gets scolded for being direct. Well, you know, fuck them. The time for polite civil discourse is bloody well shot. When you've got women killing themselves because men are releasing these images, I mean, I am horrified to hear that poor woman's story of that of the custody officer sharing the naked. That's just appalling, and it's visual terrorism. It should be a crime. But the legislation just does not keep up with the technology. And the reason why that is because people don't care unless you're being a victim. And then if you're a victim, you brought it on yourself because how dare you produce those images? What did you expect? Well, you know what? You bloody expect common decency. You expect respect, and you don't expect to be sexually violated or non-sexually violated through the image. And I guess, you know, Susan Sontag was right 30 years ago. The camera is all about gender. You shoot the victim, you know, you aim at the victim. And this is where we are now, where, you know, the internet has set up this wonderful cesspit where men can violate us every day through images, and it's thrown back on us as victims. Well, what did you expect? So, you know, hats off to you for all, you know, for tackling this, because this is huge and it's only going to get worse. And, you know, this whole narrative where we just blame women for existing in online spaces is an attempt to get us off online spaces. Yeah. But we should be just deleting men from the internet, to be honest. Do you know? But I just, I get the same thing. I get the same clap back. Oh, your language is too violent. You're too passionate. You're too this. Well, I'm sorry, you know. And in fact, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I made a sex tape with a gentleman who I wouldn't have made a sex tape with if he had told me something before instead of after. So I had to spend yesterday reeling off a bloody cease and desist letter just in case that was to then get released on to the internet. And it just astounds me that, you know, legislators don't see this as a crime or a serious crime to be taken seriously, because the impacts on the victim is so perverse. You know, people are losing jobs. You know, people are getting kicked out of school. You know, women are killing themselves because they've been violated through the image. And I guess that's where I kind of come into it. What started off as a PhD chapter on the way the photograph has been weaponized against sex workers has morphed into something more passionate about, well, what is image-based violence? What is image-based violence in the context of the internet, and it just royally pisses me off that, you know, the internet has been around since what, 94 96, and we're still, what, it's 2020 and we're having, we're not, we don't even yet have a definition of what properly what is the, you know, the visual terrorism. And I just think it's so bloody frustrating that we're so far behind the ball on this, that sadly more women are going to be experiencing this before we get past this victim blaming narrative and actually make you know, make the internet a safer place for women. That's my rant.
Excellent rant. Tough quality rant.
Yes.
Camille, you're reminding me of an interview I did with Blah. I'm not sure if you're aware. She's a UK porn performer with Irish based roots, and she spoke about, she was outed in a mainstream newspaper in England, and the article had nothing to do with her. They just used a picture of someone who was a sex worker on an article. Yeah. She wasn't involved in, it wasn't about her. They just found her because she looked a bit like cool, and she had her, I think she had blue hair at the time. And she just fit that brief. And this was 2 days before Christmas. So she then had to go to her family on Christmas Eve and explain to her family that she was a sex worker. Even that, like, yeah, so this article had nothing to do with her whatsoever, but they just, everyone was able to put the dots together.
It's about, and it's like, do you know, it comes down about, you know, certain women are public women and we have public ownerships over their bodies, which is why sex workers appear so much in the media. But there is one case from years ago, and this is just absolutely horrendous, where this woman got her headshots taken by a photographer, signed a piece of paper and said, yep, I give permission for the photographer to use those as stock photos. Then some company in New York brought her image as a stock photo and then used her face photo in a campaign about AIDS and blasted her face in this campaign, said, I live with AIDS. And in fact, this woman wasn't living with AIDS. And she got so much horrendous abuse and violence through that because her image was used in a way that would generate you know, harm to her, even though it was possibly used with good intent, but with, you know, malicious consequences. So it's not, it's certainly something that's not new. And it's, you know, like I said, Megan, you've got a battle on your hands, but I have no doubt.
I know.
No.
We all have faith, though, that Megan's well up for that battle.
Look, I take on who I have to.
There is a bit about this in terms of the newspapers doing that deliberately. And I've had this before where I've had a tweet go viral and a newspaper has picked it up and has gone through my social media and pulled a picture of me and put me up when it's got nothing to do with the tweet. And I was lucky because I know the law, right? In Ireland, if you've taken that picture, you have intellectual copyright over it. So I contacted, it was the Daily Mail, I'm not going to lie. I contacted the editor and I contacted the journalist who had literally just pulled something off my Twitter and did an article about it. And I said, I want that image taken down. And she said, oh, you'll have to contact the editor. Contacted the editor and the editor was ignoring me. So I then sent the editor an email and I said, right, well, I don't know if you know, but I'm living in Ireland and that's my intellectual property. So I'm going to start charging you by the minute. And 5 minutes later, it was down. So if you have to go to that length to get your images taken down, like, and people who are in Ireland, remember this, it is your intellectual. If you've taken it, it is your intellectual property. And that's the law that covers you at the moment. So you can actually charge people for using it. So if papers are using your image without your permission, charge them.
The Sun pulled mine like a week or two ago off my Instagram. I was like, what? I was just so shocked. I was like, what the hell? I was on News Talk, I think, and every newspaper in the country pulled the story and just all of my, I just blew up. Like, I was on all the papers and everything, and they were pulling random pictures off my Instagram. And I was like, this is nightmare.
We have Vicky there who has a point. So, Vicky Conway, I think you're good to go.
I just wanted to say about the reform in Ireland, I think a really important thing to appreciate is this is based, the proposals are based on a report by the Law Reform Commission. And the Law Reform Commission has proposed how things should be, and that it's a privacy-based offence rather than a sexual offence. And one of the things about Irish law reform is that once the Law Reform Commission have made a report, the government very rarely deviates from the content of that report. So there's a real battle here, because it would be really stark for the government to do something different to what's in that report. And one of the interesting points is that I've spoken to people on the Law Reform Commission, and they held focus groups with young people when they were doing this report. And when I challenged them and said, why is it privacy rather than sexual offence? The response was, the kids didn't see it as a sexual offence. Mm. And I was like,
that's about how are you expecting
that from children? How are they supposed to know what's a sexual offence or not? It's not the victim's duty to define what's happened to them. It's for the law to define it.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, I genuinely think Megan's petition is really important. But I think everyone who's listening or who cares about this issue needs to contact the RTD and say, I know the Law Reform Commission has said it should be a privacy offence, but it really needs to be a sexual offence. And that could be the full content of your email. But there needs to be a substantive reason given to the government to deviate from what the Law Reform Commission have said. So I'm just saying, as a tactical point, that's something really important to bear in mind.
Vicky, can I ask a question around that? If it's been a recommendation from the Law Reform Commission, will it go to committee stage? And can we intervene at committee stage?
Yeah, all legislation has to go to committee stage. Generally, once the Law Reform Commission has proposed legislation, you tend to find that it goes through much quicker, because it's felt that they've done the groundwork, right? And they've done all the consultation and everything on it, so it can go quite quickly. Yes, you can intervene at committee stage, but there is that point that it's almost like there's a presumption that we'll pass it as is, and it won't necessarily be questioned in the same detail. So people really need to kick up a stink about that distinction, and why that matters and why it needs to be changed. Because, like, as you were talking about earlier, once it's passed, you're going to wait a long time before that gets looked at again.
Yeah, well, I am going to request to meet with Minister for Justice and every politician I can anyway in the next few weeks. I was waiting for the Dáil Coineáil to come back after they took their holiday. But I'm going to ask to meet as many of them as I can, because this is going to be talked about now in the Dáil. It's on stage two, but it has to be put before the Dáil, and there's going to be multiple talks. So the more people I can talk to about this, the more of an understanding I can get for when it is talked about in the Dáil, is what I'm thinking.
So Megan, I'll catch up with you afterwards on that. Okay. And just to let you know that the Minister for Children and the Minister for Justice are both still taking meetings, so no harm to email them now.
Okay, perfect.
I think we might wrap up on that point just for time. But so I suppose what we covered today is, like, please do take action. Don't be a passive listener, and don't be a passive human in society, because that's what it comes down to, like, basic decency for respecting others. So what you can do is you can sign Megan's petition to enact the legislation on this. You can contact your TD about this. Also have a look at the Campaign for Justice for Dara Quigley as well. I'm sure her mum would be delighted to have more hands on deck for that aspect of things. And again, like Susan was saying, you know, if you're sharing these images, you need to recognise that you are a sexual offender, whether you took the images or whether you're just actually sharing them as well. And there's no black and white on that. That's what it is. It's, you are a sexual offender and you're contributing to someone's trauma and distress and harm. So that's on you. So, you know, have that conversation with your friends if they're sharing it to you, and fight back and say, this isn't acceptable to do this. Megan, where can people find you if they want to chat to you further?
Probably Twitter is probably the best place. I'm most active on there. It's Megan J. Renee, MEGANJRENEE is probably the best place to get me. But I do try to get back to everything I can anyway.
Perfect. And Susan?
Yeah, so people can contact me at SusanWalsh@sexualhealthcentre.com, and we're on Peter Street, so people, we actually are open, we're in full operation, so people can pop in or ring. We've a helpline they can email. There's loads of platforms that people can get in touch. And we've got a whole team working inside there. So I would, if anybody needs any support, I would encourage them to absolutely get in touch with us.
Brilliant. And that's down in Cork as well.
Cork, yeah,
so, yeah. You're not the capital of Ireland, Susan. What was that website that you mentioned earlier? It was revengeporn.org.
It's a helpline, and Kate Worthington runs it, and it's to be fair, they've been excellent actually.
Yeah, I've talked to them a good bit as well.
Yeah, they're really good, and they've got a really good website with a lot of practical steps. So a lot of the troubleshooting that we've been kind of talking about, that if somebody has experienced something, it's a good resource to go to. So yeah
we need that for Ireland now.
Well we actually
are also doing a blog I think it's this week, and on it will be details of what I covered on the webinar. So revenge porn, intimate interview, and where the law and stuff is at the moment.
Great.
Happy days. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thanks all my listeners. Thank you, Linda, for co-hosting. Everyone, have a look over at Pack Woman Podcast. Linda's doing amazing stuff there. Are you on episode 3?
Episode 4 coming out on Sunday, and episode 4 is going to be a pretty heavy one. I'm warning people in advance, we're covering child sex abuse with a victim. So do tune in. It's a hard listen, but it's a good one.
An important listen, absolutely. Thank you to all my guests in the audience today. Really appreciate all the questions and chats that came in. Thank you to all the listeners, and please do take the advice and you know, try and do something about this issue. That would be great. Again, if you like the podcast, please rate and review. If you really like us and want to contribute to the whole running of it, we're on Patreon as well, and that's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And this episode will be up as soon as we fix it all up and make it all sparkly and stuff, so a couple of hours. Brilliant. Thank you so much, everyone, and I look forward to the next live podcast. Thank you.
Bye.